I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're going to talk about psychology and how that affects your money-making decisions. Joining me today is Ben Hockema. He is the founder of Illuminate Wealth Management. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Typically, we don't think of finance people as getting into psychology because those are two different parts of the brain. So how is it you're incorporating how people think about or the way they feel about money in how you help with clients?
That's a great question. No one's actually asked me before that way. So I think part of it comes from my family, my background. My mom was a teacher, and I have two sisters who are involved in therapy and in that kind of field. And so I think part of it's just who do I associate with and how I grew up and how that comes in. I've also had been a part of a peer group with a group of other financial planners that all kind of think in this same sort of way. We met at a conference once and kind of formed a group. And I think, you know, you learn from the people you associate with, right? And so there's one in there in particular. She's got a master's degree in behavioral finance. And I remember in college, behavioral finance classes were my favorite anyway. So part of it's interest, part of it's background and all that. But I think money is 95% behavioral and psychology, and only 5% is the numbers and the spreadsheet. And I think that applies to all of the clients that we work with.
I would agree totally. But when you seek out, if you're just starting in trying to figure out how to deal with your finances, how to create a budget, things like that, when you go to the money gurus, so to speak, the ones that we see most often on TV or YouTube, they're just very clinical. And I feel like it's intimidating to people, and they don't get an understanding of how money relates to themselves when you're just listening to somebody go, if you've got X, then put Y into this, and then you'll get Z at the end. And you're like, what?
Right. And I think it turns a lot of people off to even talking to, you know, a financial guru or talking to a financial planner or anything else, is because it's so spreadsheet numbers driven. And a lot of people, their relationship with money is not based on a spreadsheet. It's about how you feel when you see the sale and you have to decide if you're going to buy it or not. Or you get the email of a marketing email and it's really compelling. And are you going to buy something right there? Or what do you worry about when you read the news about, you know, bank failures or things like that? All of that's psychology.
Yeah.
But the gurus never talk about it. And maybe part of it's because it's very vulnerable. Money's a very intimate, vulnerable thing. And it takes a lot of work to really dive deep and find out what your true motivations are.
Yeah. And one thing that I want people to really understand is that scammers know what the psychology of money is, and that's how they get people's money. I mean, some of it has to do with a little bit of gullibility, but a lot of it is they feed on your fear. Or what you talked about, the sale, like, oh my God, there's something on sale. And I got it. So, you know, you do get a lot of these lists of, you paid too much money for something, just hit the link and you'll get all your money back. Well,
right.
You hit, you know, the link and they now have access to all of your information.
I've got a client and she's got early stage dementia. We're working with the adult children on things. But one thing we found is she was getting emails from a charitable organization that she was a part of, and they were writing the marketing messages. It was not a scam, but they were so compelling that every night she would donate $50 for a month, $50 a night, because they were such a compelling written email on, we need to solve this problem, go donate money. And, you know, we put some safeguards in place and some things. And I don't blame her at all for that, because the people know what they're doing when they're writing that copy. Mm-hmm. They know how you're going to respond.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so let's bring this back a little bit. I just feel psychology, how people think in their own way about money and how it motivates them or turns them off. But that totally affects how you're able to save money or invest it wisely.
For sure. I mean, I think, I'll just talk about myself for a second. My wife and I have two very different mindsets when it comes to money. And she was an engineer. She stays home with our kids now, but she was an engineer, very spreadsheet driven. And so we both know the numbers really, really well. But we approach money in completely opposite ways. We talk to clients about, do you fall more in the having money or wealth or your association with it? Is that about security or is it about an opportunity? And most people fall into one of two camps most of the time. And I'm definitely on the opportunity side. It's part of the reason I started my own business and founded my own company. My wife is 100% the other direction. She is all about the security. And so in our relationship with each other about money, there's a lot of conflict because we both, although the numbers are the same on the spreadsheet and we understand them, we approach it radically differently and we have to navigate that ourselves. And, and yet I know what I'm doing. And so you add to that in most people's case, if you don't spend every day talking to people about money, it's really hard to manage that relationship.
Yeah, it's not just your own personal relationship to how you react to money. If you are in an actual relationship with a person, then you've got that interaction, that relationship with how they deal with money. And your example brings to mind, I had a friend who, same thing, the husband sort of thought about money as using money for opportunities, and it didn't even have to be necessarily financial investment. They were struggling a little bit financially. They made ends meet. Wasn't paycheck to paycheck. But then he would just go out and buy these great big expenses. And one of the worst for my friend, who's the wife, he went out and bought a boat and came home with okay. the boat. Yep. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, we're trying to save for the kids' futures and our retirement. And you have a boat. And they wound up having to go to counseling. Turns out he was thinking of, the boat is an opportunity to take the kids out fishing and we can have family time. He was thinking right. of it as family time because that's what he did as a kid. That's what his dad did. And my friend is going, we can't spend the money on a boat. Like, you know, if you want family time, let's go camp out in the backyard and save a lot more money. So yeah, because she was all about same thing as your wife. She was about the safety net of the money.
I think that's a great example. And although not the exact same scenario, I've seen that happen over and over and over again with clients on, you see the purchase and you say, oh, that was the biggest waste of money in the world. And you hear the other person say, well, here's what I wanted to do with it. It's all about, you know, money's just a tool to reach your goals, fulfillment, make your life better, whatever that is. It's just a tool to get there. And what one person spends money on, they believe that's going to bring them fulfillment, whether it will or will not. And the other person, if there's a relationship there, just maybe has different priorities or different things that matter. I think it's really interesting as I work with clients that are typically pretty good savers. When they get to the point where they need to use the money, they go to close to retirement, and now they have to start spending money, they can't shift their mind into now I need to spend the money now.
Yeah.
And it again, it all goes back to there's the number on the spreadsheet, but really money's, you've got a relationship with money and that's going to impact all your decisions related to it the rest of your life.
Yeah. I've started to worry slightly that I've become a bad version of a cheapskate because I don't want like, I'm not paying 20 cents for, you know, whatever. You're like, I don't even want to put out 20 cents for something that I feel is worthless. But I just spent $2,500 reinforcing my garage door with insulation because the garage is below my kitchen and a bathroom area. And it's always cold in there because the garage wasn't insulated. So I'll put out $2,500 for that, but I won't pay for a $2 item. Like, what is that?
We're really good at compartmentalizing when we spend money, I think. it makes sense over here, and it's going to make life better and more convenient and everything, but I can't go and spend the 20 cents on something else. I think that's pretty normal, actually.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go a little bit more into the psychology of money and how that affects how we do invest in ourselves and save. So we'll be right back with Ben Hockema. He is a certified financial planner and the founder of Illuminate Wealth Management.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show. If it affects your life in any way money-wise, we're talking about it. And today we're talking about how you feel about money, the psychology, how that impacts your financial decisions. Joining me is Ben Hockema. He is the founder of Illuminate Wealth Management. So, Ben, how does how you feel about money affect how I invest my money? Or maybe I don't invest it. Maybe I'm just sticking all the money in a jar and burying it in the backyard.
Well, I would say my wife, the extreme security, probably would be in that camp if it wasn't for me. That would be 100% in cash sitting in the backyard. But I think it goes right in line with the way people invest. If you do some self-analysis or you talk with a mentor or a spouse or somebody else and you recognize that you fall more in the security camp, you need to be aware as you go to actually invest that you are always going to be in the lens of, I need to protect my principal. I need to make sure to never lose money, which has some pros to it. You're not going to lose money. But also, if you're investing for a long term, you're not going to make very much. And that means you ultimately have to save a whole lot more if you're going to let your emotions dictate how you invest. On the flip side, if you are like some of my clients who are very extreme on the opportunity side, and if left to their own devices, they would go and invest in wild projects with awesome upside, but the potential to lose everything, and they've done that a few times on their own, that will put you in a potential where you could lose everything. You could save for 30 years and then put it all on a bad investment and it goes to zero. And all of that, if you know you're in that camp, what I like to do specifically for those people is we have maybe 5% of your money is in a play account and we just assume it's going to zero, but you have fun with it. And 95% is invested for the long run that I don't let you touch. And it's not because I should have control over it. It's to protect you from yourself. Make it harder to go and ruin that part of your money.
Right. And also you want to take a look even within those constructs, how close to retirement are you? Because if you're in your 20s or even early 30s, you might be able to take 15% for a few years anyway of play money and just see how far you can build. But the closer you get to retirement, the more you do need to protect that so that once you get to retirement, you haven't just lost it like right before then. But the flip side for the security type people is if you haven't really saved a lot and you're getting closer to retirement, you may have to upend some of your investments and put them into more risky investments so that they hopefully make a little bit more money before you hit that 68, 9, 70 year mark, whatever year you're retiring.
What I like to do with clients is kind of talk through on the timing is when you're young, you have an abundance of time. but not a lot of wealth. And when you're closer to retirement, you have very little time, but an abundance of wealth, hopefully, at that point. And we need to construct both how much risk you're taking, what opportunities you're taking, how much security do you have on those buckets as you go through time. So as you said, if you're in your 20s and you're investing, well, you can invest even if you're all about security. It's about really how are you spending your time and building up your career and getting right habits in place is more important than how do you invest your money in your 20s. If you can lose it all, you have time to make it up.
Yeah.
When you're 65, you don't have time to make it up. You better be careful, especially if you're in the security side. You need to be even safer with your money. And I think just that framework helps a lot of people think through how they approach investing in money.
Let's say I started really early. I started my first job. I was 21, full-time, right out of college. And I may not have been on the extreme end of opportunism, but I was pretty adventurous with the investments. I invested wisely, but let them grow. And, you know, I hit 45, 50, and I'm like, God, I got, you know, $1 million, $2 million here. I don't need to work until I'm 65. I'm just going to retire. How do I know that if I retire that early, I still have enough money to carry me till 90?
Right. Our standard projection, we assume you live to 95, just because the worst thing that can happen is you pass away too late and you run out of money and the last 5 years of your life, you're homeless, right?
And right.
So, or your, you know, children have to take care of you. No one wants that. I haven't heard a single client say that's my plan is my children are going to take care of me. And so with that, I think there's the simple rules of thumb, as much flack as it gets. I think the 4% with safe withdrawal rate rule works, which is basically take your portfolio to multiply by or 0.04 and figure out how much that is. That amount you could probably take out on an annual basis and you won't run out of money if you maintain investing. That's a great rule of thumb to kind of get started, but there's so many things that can go wrong. I think a lot of people in their 50s don't think yet about long-term care or about the big healthcare costs that can come in when you're 75.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're 70, you start thinking about it all the time. And I've seen that because my youngest client's 29, my oldest client's 97. I've seen it all, right? And so through that, I think even that 4%, if you're 50 or 55 and you just want to retire right away, make sure you're retiring towards something, not away from something. So the psychology that's here is so many people stop working because they hate their job and then they don't know what to do and they lose fulfillment and they lose their identity. And I've had people go back to work because they couldn't answer the question before they retired.
Is that what the FIRE movement was 15 years-ish ago that was starting? Was people, they hoped anyway that they had enough money saved up and they could just retire early?
Yeah, so it was a big thing. Came out of the Great Financial Crisis, 2008, 2009. People were upset with corporate culture and had gone through a lot of crazy stuff in the market and the economy and everything else. And so there's this movement in the early 2010s that said, financial independence, retire early, FIRE. Let's retire early, go live our life now because tomorrow's not promised. We don't know how long we're going to live. Let's enjoy time now. And that worked for some people. The problem that I saw with people that came to me with it, they read blogs that were all about, if you're not doing it this way and you're unhappy, you should be ashamed of yourself. You have this option available to you. Why aren't you doing it? Take control of your life. And
Wow. And
a lot of that misses so much about all the things that can go wrong, all the things that matter to people. Everyone's got a different way that you view your life, the way you view yourself. Mm-hmm. Your money and your relationship with money is unique to you. And so there's no one size fits all. So even though I threw out the 4% withdrawal rule or whatever, that's a nice start. But it gets deeper than that. There's a whole lot more that you need to go into because your life is different than my life and everybody else. The FIRE movement had a lot of people that started on it and have since gone back to the corporate world because they missed all those other things.
Yeah. I hate those blogs. I hate the shows, the money people, the finance people that go, my way is the only way. And again, that may work for them, their psychological belief in how money is going to work, but that isn't for everybody.
No, not at all. They find their tribe that believes in it, but then, the 99% of people that don't think the same way, it doesn't work for them, but they try it and it just leads people down negative paths.
All right. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we'll find out about how financial planners have a love-hate relationship with budgets. So we'll be right back with Ben Hockema. He is the founder of Illuminate Wealth Management. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today we're talking about how you feel and believe about money affects your financial planning. And joining me today is a certified financial planner. That is Ben Hockema, and you are the founder of Illuminate Wealth Management. So Ben, I know that most of us struggle with a budget, which I don't even like to call it a budget, first of all, because I feel like it's dieting. It's like money dieting. And if you're intimidated by money to begin with, and then you don't even like to diet, then that's just the worst two combinations you can have. So we all have this sort of love-hate relationship with how we deal with money coming in and going out. But certified financial planners that are there to help me and guide me, you also struggle with this? Is that true?
That is true. It is, there's some great things about budgeting. There's also a lot of negative things that can happen if you don't put the right stuff in place. So exactly kind of as we talked about on the FIRE movement and the blogs and everything else, part of the problem that I see with budgets is people take it as this is it. It can't change. It's static. It's stuck. Set in stone. You have to follow it or you're a failure. And I'm all about positive reinforcement, and let's not focus on the things you're doing poorly. Let's focus on what you can do a little bit better. But let's celebrate wins when you have it. And so the biggest thing that I see with clients that when we get really into it and we talk about cash flow and where the money's going, if you go $5 over your food budget, you feel really bad.
Right.
Even if you were under $20 on your entertainment budget. And we want to focus on the wins as much as possible. So I like to focus on higher level categories rather than get down to the nitty gritty, because I think it's unsustainable. Similar to a diet, like you said, it's hard if you're very specific on everything you're doing all the time. It's just hard to live life that way because life happens. Life happens. Yeah. And so we focus on five main categories. You start with income. What money's going to come in? That's the top. That's very important. The next most important piece is taxes. Your money is not your money until you've paid taxes. And so we've got to subtract that off. And that is income taxes, payroll taxes, things like that. I think it's important to see that, because if you hear you got a raise, a lot of people immediately spend that $5,000 raise they got when really you didn't get $5,000. You have to pay taxes on that. So let's subtract that off. Now we're left with three categories that we can use that money for. So we have fixed expenses. That's the things you have to pay for every single month or year, no matter what. Then we have variable expenses. So that's the money going away that is for everything else. I include food in variable because there's a wide range between high-end restaurants and the ramen diet on food. And so we put that in variable because that can change. And then the last category is savings, or another way to think about savings is future spending, because money is either spent now in the expense category, or you're planning to spend it in the future. And so you want to invest it, have it grow, and spend it later. That's the whole idea. So it's now and in the future. So what do you have to spend in the fixed expenses? What do you choose to spend? And then what are you choosing to push towards long term? That would also include debt payments if you're paying more than the minimum. That's in our future category, which I really like.
I like that. I had not heard it described as future spending. Yeah, I like that a lot. And you will be proud of me, because I plan out when I win the lottery, you know, when I win that, you know, $10 million, I automatically know that I'm only going to get $555,000.
Okay,
because all the rest is going to taxes. And so then I plan on what I'm going to spend with that $555,000.
That's great. Well, and I think people think of it that way, definitely. When, you know, you always hear half the money goes away to taxes for that. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to a client this morning just about, you know, her pay for this year. She's a business owner, and, you know, she's talking in the number she wants, and I'm talking what her company can pay her, and where I notice the disconnect is in the taxes. I'm saying how much before tax, she's saying how much she wants after tax. Those numbers aren't matching up because taxes are a big number. So it's great if you can reduce taxes. That's a whole nother episode we could go on.
Right.
But I think taxes have to come out. But it's good. At least you're thinking that way when you win the lottery.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Okay. What else do we need to think about? Or you can't really change the way you believe about money, but you can change knowing what you think about money. What do we need to know to then invest wisely?
I think kind of step one is get to know yourself a little bit better. I like to ask the two different questions that to new clients that I think you can ask yourself. So one is, if you had $1 billion, how would your life be different? And kind of walk through that exercise. You know, you've taken the taxes off and all the other stuff. And I choose that number because it's so big that no one can, you know, no normal person can really spend all that, right?
Right.
And so once you've taken money off the table, how do you feel about that? How does that change your decisions day to day? And I think that can help you kind of recognize the relationship you have with money, because how you feel different when that's not a factor will change a little bit how you can spend money now. So that's kind of step one. Second part of that is, what's your earliest memory of money? There's a lot of things that happen in our formative years that I think affect you all the way the rest of your life on your relationship with money, whether it's a positive or negative association. And so thinking through that and maybe talking with somebody else, I think those are good kind of first steps to get to know yourself better on money. So that's the start. Once you know that, then you can go and recognize patterns of behavior that you want to fix. So whether that's on, you think about investments, is it all about I don't want to lose money, or it's all about, yeah, but if I just invest this, I'm going to, 100x what I have and have all the money I need. That's helpful to protect yourself from yourself. Or how do you spend money? How do you react to the sale that comes across on the email marketing? You have to start with understanding yourself, but then you can recognize the patterns if you know what to look for on all those things. And now you can separate the emotions from the rational side.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Ben Hakama, again, you are a certified financial planner and you are the founder of Illuminate Wealth Management. Do you take clients from everywhere, or are you only certified in particular states?
No. So I work with clients on an ongoing basis. We have about 60 clients now in 15 different states. So I've got it all covered, and actually my team is around the country as well. So we can work with people anywhere. And the easiest way to find us is just go to our website, illuminatewm.com. And there's a lot of good information on there, and you can read our blogs. And if you want to schedule a free meeting, there's a button right there.
Awesome. All right. IlluminateWM.com.
Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready, because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.